Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Sarah Gonzalez filling in for Brian Lehrer. Good morning again, everyone. Like any other week, it seems it's been a tumultuous and headline-filled past few days for the Trump camp with the hiring of several new high-profile campaign executives. Plus, news has emerged about a sweet tax deal that Trump's Atlantic City casinos received in 2011 and the connections to the Chris Christie administration. Here to break it all down for us is Matt Katz, WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio reporter who covers Donald Trump and Chris Christie. He is the creator of the Christie Tracker and author of American Governor, Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption, and he's here to talk about the recent developments. Hi, Matt.
Hi there, Sarah. Good morning.
You and me, the original New Jersey Public Radio reporters.
How about that?
Okay, so Matt, let's talk Jersey first. When Chris Christie became governor, New Jersey auditors and lawyers had been battling for years to collect almost $30 million in long overdue taxes owed by Donald Trump's Atlantic City casinos. What happened after Christie took office?
He got a very sweet deal, as you mentioned in the intro. The Trump casinos only had to pay $5 million off of that $30 million debt, which means he got about a $25 million discount. I should say this was Trump casinos. Trump didn't own the whole place at the time. He was a large shareholder. This was a deal, though, that really went on behind the scenes. Nobody knew about it. We only found out about it yesterday because a reporter at the New York Times was apparently digging through old bankruptcy documents and was able to see that this settlement was made by the Christie administration in 2011, Christie's second year in office. It wasn't something that was public. It wasn't something that would be available in state documents. And if Trump wasn't running for president, we would have never known about it. And what's most peculiar is that these guys are obviously friends, and Christie has this very significant role in the Trump campaign, and they were having dinner with their wives at Trump's hotel in Columbus Circle periodically as these settlement talks between Trump casinos and the Christie administration were going on. Christie, by the way, of course, he said he had nothing to do with it, didn't know that this was even happening. His spokespeople put out a very strong statement in that regard, and I spoke to people in the Christie administration who used to work in the Christie administration yesterday, and they said it's unlikely that this would have reached something of this level, would have reached his office, but, you know, knowing their relationship and knowing what we know about Christie being a micromanager, it certainly raises questions.
And a Christie spokesman has claimed to have had no knowledge of Trump's casino's tax situation, but several bankruptcy cases from the mid-2000s were filed under Christie's office of U.S. attorney, right?
Yes, that's right. And It was interesting. And when the story first published yesterday, the spokesman for Christie had like a pretty lukewarm denial. But yesterday, as this got more attention, that denial got more heavy handed. And I think that has to do with the fact that, you know, Christie's approval ratings are pretty poor in New Jersey. And this is something that I think would damage Christie far more than Trump. In the litany of Trump alleged scandals, this won't make the list for the Trump campaign, and it would make some supporters think that he's just a good businessman and knew how to work the levers of government. For Christie, though, who took over a government in 2010 that was broke, and then was cutting a $25 million deal while telling, you know, union members and teachers that they had to slash their health benefits, who to this day doesn't have any money to pay for road repairs in the state of New Jersey, this is going to, I think, reflect more poorly on Christie within the state of New Jersey than it would on Trump nationally.
And why would New Jersey let Trump casinos off the hook? I mean, is this a normal development in corporate tax litigation, or does it raise questions about Trump getting, you know, preferential treatment in New Jersey, you know, by Governor Christie?
Right. Well, Sarah, you know, I don't know much about tax law, as you know. All I know is about New Jersey. And I can tell you that what the experts say is that it is normal to like settle and, you know, negotiate an agreement when a large entity owes this much money. This was pretty extraordinary. I think it's 17 cents on the dollar. What I know about New Jersey, though, is powerful people do get into rooms and make deals, which is why this is such an intriguing story. I obviously Christie has denied that through spokespeople, has not been interviewed on camera or on tapes yet about this.
So Trump casinos owed $30 million. They paid $5 million. Do you know if Trump's casinos fared differently than other Atlantic City casinos who maybe were in a similar situations?
You know, the Borgata Casino, which was a different situation, but they had a tax appeal with the city of Atlantic City for several years, and they got a significant break, but that was through a judge. It was not through the Treasury Department in the state of New Jersey and the Attorney General's office negotiating a settlement. So this is something of an unusual situation. And again, this was Trump Casino, so Trump didn't own the whole thing or even most of the casinos. I just imagine Trump, we know, is very concerned about the bottom line. And it's hard to imagine that these guys are, you know, breaking bread together and he's got this $30 million negotiation going on with the state of New Jersey that Trump doesn't at least mention it over dinner. Maybe he mentioned it and maybe Christie said, you know, that I'm not interested in talking about that. Let's go back to talking about the Mets or something. But it certainly makes you wonder. And, you know, these guys are close. They've been friends for 15 years. Christie has been very involved in this campaign. He there's been this turmoil that we may talk about involving the higher echelons of the Trump campaign. But Christie has been a constant. He is somebody who Trump appears to listen to. Trump brought Christie yesterday to the FBI office in New York City for Trump's first ever confidential national security briefing that all presidential nominees get. And Christie was there alongside him, which indicates that he is very important in Trump world and could potentially be something like a chief of staff or attorney general. And that is also why this story is quite significant.
All right. And what do you know about that first security briefing that Donald Trump received?
I mean, you'd be shocked to know that Christie did not call me afterwards and tell me about our latest threat levels with ISIS. But we know that this is what candidates get. We know that Trump brought a retired lieutenant general with him, who's been a surrogate for him, Lieutenant General Flynn, along with Christie. And we don't know what the significance of the briefing is, like how much in terms of state secrets were shared with Trump. We know that it's just a way of preparing a possible president for being prepared to go into office on day one and be able to deal with the many crises around the world and the United States' relationship with those with various countries. But we don't know actually what was said. And shockingly enough, Trump has yet to tweet any of the national security secrets that were given to him yesterday. So we'll have to wait on that.
Matt, okay, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Matt Katz. He covers Chris Christie and Donald Trump for WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. And I am Sarah Gonzalez filling in for Brian Lehr. Listeners, we want to hear from you. If you want to weigh in, if you have a question for Matt, if you have any thoughts on this casino deal, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Matt, is there any connection here to Trump's refusal to disclose his income tax returns?
I mean, I don't think so. I don't think this is something that would show up on his income taxes. But it is an indication that Trump knows how to work the system, and that if there was a way to avoid paying taxes, income, corporate or otherwise, he was going to do it. So I think that's one of the reasons why Trump may not be releasing these taxes, is because maybe he hasn't paid much in the way of taxes. Certainly could be one of the reasons. So I don't think there's a direct connection, but there's something of a parallel for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about some of the new hires at the Trump campaign. There's been a couple. Who are these guys?
Yeah, I mean, the most significant is Steve Bannon. So he is the new CEO of the Trump campaign. It's kind of an unusual title for a political campaign. And he was running Breitbart News. And for those who aren't familiar with this website, it is extremely significant in the world of conservative politics, maybe the most powerful brand in conservative media politics right now. And it's sort of the media version of the Trump campaign, Breitbart is. And now that the head of Breitbart is going to the Trump campaign, it means really that this campaign is going to be more Trumpian than ever. I mean, we're not going to get a more so-called presidential Trump. Breitbart, they're provocateurs, and as is Trump. And so I think we're going to see more of that. And I spoke to a reporter at Breitbart yesterday, and he was telling me that, you know, basically they were reporting things that they considered to be conservative populism, and that it's talking about crimes by, quote, illegal aliens, the spread of Islam and how Islam is taking over parts of the world. Hillary Clinton's advisor, Huma Abedin, her ties, so-called ties to Muslim extremists, the fear of white identity disappearing, Planned Parenthood being compared to the Holocaust. These sorts of ideas, they say they were reporting, and then Trump sort of glommed onto. He realized that it was resonating with people, and it resonated with him, and then these are the theme became some of the themes of his campaign.
Wow.
And now this media arm, they've been called sort of the propaganda arm of the Trump campaign. They've really like built him up through the primary process and knocked down the Republican establishment, like Speaker Paul Ryan. Now they are sort of merged with the campaign. It's a very, very interesting development.
Would you say that Breitbart's place in the tradition of conservative media is sort of similar to Trump's place in the Republican Party?
Oh, for sure. I mean, they're definitely on the same side of that. I would consider neither Breitbart nor Trump really Republicans in the traditional sense. They don't espouse many of the traditional Republican values, and they despise much of the traditional Republican establishment. So they are really on the same team there. And when the history books are written, we're going to see this develop, and we look at what happened to the Republican Party as a result of the 2016 election. This development yesterday with the head of Breitbart going over to the campaign and running the campaign is going to be included. Another development that's similar to this is that apparently, and this has been reported in a couple of places, Roger Ailes, recently ousted as the head of Fox News, which was the dominant conservative media outlet. Now he's ousted because of a series of sexual harassment allegations. Ailes is now going to be consulting for the Trump campaign when it comes to the debates. So now you have Ailes also on the team. So the pretense of any separation between media and politics is absolutely exploded and gone. I mean, there's been this sort of circulating door between media and politics for quite some time, and political consultants become political commentators, vice versa. And that was happening on both sides of the aisle. But this is like the absolute explosion of that concept. It's quite unbelievable.
And what do these new hires, you know, Roger Ailes, Stephen Bannon, tell us about what we might expect out of the Trump campaign? I know, you know, his advisors and Republican leaders have been trying to sort of impose a level of discipline on Trump. And it seems like maybe we can expect to see more of the Donald Trump that secured him the nomination.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it means. I think it's going to be a more, even more fiery Trump. You know, Bannon from Breitbart, he's called the Breitbart team Fight Club. And this really means war. And now they're sort of massing forces with a lot of the people that have been fighting Hillary Clinton for a quarter century. And here is finally their last battle. This is between what Hillary Clinton has in the past called the vast right-wing conspiracy. This is their last chance to keep her out of the White House, and that means, you know, Breitbart and Drudge and Rush Limbaugh and now Donald Trump. And so I think what we're going to see, I think we're going to hear Monica Lewinsky's name come up more and more often. I think we're going to hear the rape allegations from Juanita Broderick, who in the 90s said Bill Clinton had raped her in the 70s. Maybe we're going to hear the long debunked accusation that Hillary Clinton was involved in killing Vincent Foster. I mean, these are storylines that are very prominent in conservative media and that, you know, Trump has hinted at in the past. And now I think they're going to become a more central part of the campaign. They're going to go nuclear.
Okay. And Matt, do you know how Trump supporters feel about some of these new hires? I mean, he's down in basically every poll now. Have you spoken to his Trump supporters?
Yeah, I mean, part of this is somewhat inside baseball, I think, for some people. I mean, you know, okay, he has a new staff. I mean, for Trump supporters, it's all about Trump. But I spent some time listening to conservative talk radio yesterday, and they are big fans of Breitbart. So it's certainly a net positive for those Trump supporters who are paying close attention. In fact, there's a lot of Trump supporters I've spoken to and conservatives I've spoken to who don't think Fox News has sold out and that Breitbart really represents their viewpoints. So the fact that he is aligning forces with them, I think is a positive for a lot of Trump supporters.
All right. And I want to go to some callers. Kevin in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC? Kevin? Oh, I think we just lost you. Okay. We're going to bring it back to New Jersey then. Andrew in Essex County, New Jersey, you have a question for Matt Katz.
Good morning. How's everybody? And I just want to say you're doing a great job in substituting for Brian. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I agree.
My question is, with some substantiation to back it up, whether Chris Christie has not made a pattern over his political career of some quid pro quo appearances of impropriety. For example, I recall within the last year, I believe, I wish I could be more specific, reading in the New York Times that there was a state of New Jersey lawsuit against ExxonMobil for a horrendous environmental mishap. And the amount that was being asked for in the lawsuit, if memory serves, was $5.9 billion with a B. I recall reading that Chris Christie as governor in a quick overnight backdoor something or other thing reported in the New York Times said the deal settled the lawsuit for a few hundred million as opposed to $5.9 billion. And he also had received in the not too distant past from ExxonMobil, and again, if memory serves, $700,000+ campaign contribution to Chris Christie's presidential bid. So my question is, as someone who probably follows Chris Christie and his political career far more closely than me, you're more knowledgeable, do you think that there is evidence of a pattern of what appears to be quid pro quo on Mr. Christie's part when he sees a political benefit for himself?
Matt?
I would certainly say that has been the cloud that has surrounded the latter part of his years as governor, for sure, and that has been the accusation against him. And because he's been such a prominent fundraiser, both for himself and his campaigns, but also for the Republican Governors Association, where he has mixed with a lot of powerful people and businesses that also do business with the state of New Jersey, those questions have been raised many times. And you were referring to the Exxon deal, which was I think your numbers were pretty close. There was a suit with Exxon that was going on many years over environmental cleanup, and the Christie administration settled for 3 cents on the dollar. It was they initially sought $8.9 billion. The state of New Jersey initially sought that from Exxon. They ended up getting $225 million, and there that caused a quite the to do. People were upset about that. Now nobody expected the full $8.9 billion to come into New Jersey state coffers because of this settlement, but they expected to get more than $225 million. And yeah, I believe ExxonMobil had donated to the Republican Governors Association, which caused some questions about that. And there was also an issue. This first came up really after Sandy, when there was a cleanup firm that got a large contract from the state of New Jersey that had ties to Mississippi Governor Halle Barbour. Their lobbyist was Halle Barbour, who was more responsible than any other individual in helping to get Christie elected in 2009, because he raised through the Republican Governors Association most of Christie's campaign war chest. So yes, this quid pro quo has gotten Christie in trouble before. And the other thing that the Trump deal speaks to is that Christie has this affinity for the rich and famous, and that has gotten him into trouble before. I mean, you remember he flew around on Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. He flew around on his private jet going to Dallas Cowboys games a couple of years ago, and that got him into trouble because Jerry Jones had a big contract with the Port Authority related to the World Trade Center reconstruction. So, you know, part of, I don't know if this is driven by how the governor likes to hang out with those who have private jets and have big towers in Manhattan, or if it has to do with quid pro quo and making deals with the state of New Jersey that will help his own campaign. But it has certainly been his Achilles heel over the last few years.
All right. I think we're going to leave it there. Matt Katz, thank you so much for joining us. Matt Katz covers Christie and Trump for WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. And you're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Sarah Gonzalez filling in for Brian Lehrer. And coming up, the most dangerous place in the world got a little safer. Stay with us.